Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The identification of a fast-spreading HIV variant has highlighted the importance of stepping up action to halt the HIV pandemic and reach everyone with testing and treatment. That's according to UNAIDS, which is leading the global fight to end HIV and AIDS. The agency made the appeal on Monday, citing newly published research from the Netherlands about a more transmissible and damaging variant of HIV, which has been circulating in the country for years and remains receptive to treatment. UNAIDS said while the variant does not represent a major public health threat, it underscores the urgency of speeding up efforts as roughly 10 million people worldwide living with HIV are still not on antiretroviral therapy. Eamon Murphy, the agency's acting deputy executive director, said, "We urgently need to deploy cutting-edge medical innovations in ways that reach the communities most in need." He added that whether it's HIV treatment or COVID-19 vaccines, inequalities in access are perpetuating pandemics in ways that harm us all. Strengthened UN regulation on emergency braking for trucks and coaches is expected to further increase safety on the road, the organization's regional office for Europe said on Monday. UN Regulation No. 131, adopted nearly a decade ago, made it compulsory in the European Union, the EU, for new trucks and coaches to use an Advanced Emergency Braking System, or AEBS. Last month, a working party adopted new draft provisions under the regulation outlining stronger automated braking, even if the driver was not alerted beforehand by a warning system. If adopted by the World Forum on the Harmonization of Vehicle Regulations this June, the revised regulation would enter into force by February 2023. The new measures build on experience gained with AEBS in recent years and should significantly reduce accidents and fatalities occurring in traffic jams. They will also restrict conditions under which emergency braking assistance systems can be switched off. Systems will have to be automatically reactivated after 15 minutes, basically meaning they will be activated almost permanently. And finally, an agreement between the World Health Organization, WHO, and the Commonwealth aims to strengthen collaboration to address the COVID-19 pandemic, vaccine equity, advancing universal health coverage, and building resilient health systems. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus and Patricia Scotland, the British Baroness who heads the 54-member Commonwealth Group of Countries, signed the Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, on Monday in Geneva. It covers seven priority areas, which include strengthening global health security, promoting the health of vulnerable groups, building a data partnership, and creating space for innovation and exchange of knowledge. Commonwealth countries have a combined population of 2.5 billion, more than 60% of whom are under the age of 29. So far, more than 77 million COVID-19 cases have been reported in Commonwealth nations. Overall, some 42% of citizens are fully vaccinated. Deanne Penn, UN News.
goodness, boy. Boy, oh boy, boys and girls, we've been having some technical problems, but we've got it on. We've got the problem fixed. It's fixed. Oh, yes. So we'll have John Grant up here at the top of the hour in just a few more minutes. Are you ready? behind the scenes, listeners. You would not believe it. Here, only in Kansas did we have these kind of technical problems. But we got it on. We got it. We did it, and we have. After a hiatus, John Grant is back on the air with me. Hello, John Grant.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
What are you doing?
Huh?
All right. We made it on the air. It's 61 degrees today in Kansas. It's 61
degrees
today. You said
61? Did you say 61?
Yes.
Holy
61.
Shit.
61.
Jesus. That is wacko, man. Yeah.
I went running to the phone. I was like, oh, my God. I was outside. And I thought, oh, no, I gotta get out of here and get back to the house. So, yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, you go out and, you know, sun yourself and get some sun, yeah.
Yeah, we're supposed to have a full test. I mean, we need the water. We need rain, but it's just sunlight. I mean, what is it? February? Is it groundhog? Is that, that's not in Pennsylvania. Is it the groundhog? Or is that the groundhog, the big groundhog party?
Oh, yeah, Pennsylvania, I think, leads the Groundhog Day stuff, you know. It's a big blowhard thing every somewhere in Pennsylvania. Punxsutawney Phil, I think they called
nobody can pronounce that.
Punxsutawney, I think it's an old Native American name. Anyway, Punxsutawney Phil, I'm sure he's not the original guy, but he says the same name. And I don't know, they haul this fat little guy out, and he looks around at all the reporters and all the flashing lights, and he goes, what the fuck is going on? And then they decide, well, did he bite his tail or did he not bite his, whatever, he jumps back in his hole, that means there are going to be six more weeks of winter. It's kind of silly.
Well, of course, it's ridiculously. It's not even silly. It's ridiculous. It's like
it's ridiculous.
Like
you're right. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It's the and it is from Pennsylvania. Am I right?
Yes. And of course, the groundhogs. We have a groundhog that lives under our shed in the back. And you know, we used to have a neighbor. He's gone now. Who on the second floor window would shoot the groundhogs, but. We like our groundhogs. We're just adorable, these little fat slobs, you know, waddling over the yard. They then stand up and look. Do they hear a noise? And then they haul their ass back under the hooch, you know. And he doesn't bother my tomatoes or anything. He doesn't crawl under the fence. He's all right.
Well, you know, I'm sure there's abundance.
Yeah.
The Grant Ponderosa.
Right,
you know,
there's plenty of rotten stuff to eat out back there, I think. Yeah.
Right.
He's cool.
Why eat tomatoes? I have a cornucopia of Pennsylvania garbage here.
One of my tomatoes is in the open towards the back, and, you know, we have a suburban yard, but we have, you know, the poor deer, they don't know where to go. We have deer in our yard sometimes in the they always end up eating my tomato plants in the back there. So I go out there in the morning, and all these tomato plants are nothing but stems, you know.
God.
So we live and let live, you know. I always look at the deer out there, and I look at those luscious haunches they have and the venison, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, God, look at that delicious leg out there. But I'm not allowed to, obviously, shoot the poor deer. That wouldn't
but
be
you
proper.
Are?
No, I can't. I'd be arrested, of course, for shooting in my neighborhood, you know.
So John Grant is a leg man, we understand now. So,
what did you say? You call me a white man?
A leg man.
A leg man. I got you. Yeah, well, especially thought.
And ground. Really is. Groundhog Day does come from this unusual, weird. I mean, I this weird name place. I mean, what the, where the hell is that? You don't know?
Punxsutawney? I don't know. It's somewhere out in the middle of Pennsylvania. You know, it's out there where James Carville said between Philadelphia and Pennsylvania it was, or, and Pittsburgh, it was Alabama in between. It's out there in Alabama somewhere between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh.
Well,
maybe
people,
State College
guess,
area, I think, out there, you know, that way.
Oh, State College, yeah. Right.
I'm in the middle of the state.
Well, I, all I know is that when it comes up on the TV, you know, people all around, at least Kansas, at least in Kansas.
Right, right.
People, they go, well, it's Groundhog Day. Yes, honey. And it's somewhere in Pennsylvania, but I can't pronounce that goddamn name on the TV set.
Punxsutawney.
You know,
Punxsutawney.
There you go. You helped out a lot. Many people in Kansas.
Punxsutawney.
Yeah.
I think some other areas and other states have actually jumped on the bandwagon, and there's like, you know, captive groundhogs elsewhere that are, you know, hauled out to look at the reporters and their cameras and going, what the hell is going on here? And then they decide, oh, he blinked. So we have 6 more weeks of summer or winter.
Winter,
you know,
that's what it
is. This is the fun world we live in, you know. Now, I mean, the world's going to hell in a handbasket, and you got to entertain yourself. So you crank up cute little cuddly Punxsutawney Phil, and, you know. Politician was grabbed one of them 1 year, and it got loose, and it was a real hoot there. I don't know if it bit him or what it did, but anyway, that's the history of Punxsutawney Phil.
The groundhog is real.
Our Pennsylvania groundhog, yes, indeed. Yeah.
It's a real thing. It's real, listeners.
It's real. It's real, and it. It's important, and
this year it did say 6 more.
Well, every year he says that. I don't recall ever getting a break, you know. But you have 61 degree, you know. We're going to get 55 coming up in a couple of days. We're getting that weather coming from you guys, and. I would question Punxsutawney Phil, if we get weather like that, you know. But then again, you know, you get an April blizzard and you get snow in April and you go like, what the fuck is going on? Anyway.
Well, we need to think of Punxsutawney or Tawny. Phil.
Punxsutawney, yeah, Phil.
Coming out. I mean, he's a groundhog. I mean, we elect presidents, I mean, that look like groundhogs. I can think of one with orange hair. I can think of
and,
one with
you know,
orange
we,
hair.
We give decisions made by people similar to the decision made by Punxsutawney Phil, whether to jump back in his hole. You know, we give those decisions great weight, you know, in our culture. You know, if people say they do, you know. Especially if they're a celebrity rather than a groundhog, you know, we give them a lot of credit.
Well, at least Punxsutawney Phil knows when to stay in his hole.
Yeah.
Because this last week has been a doozy when it comes to the great orange one.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
I
think Punxsutawney Phil may look out at all the human beings and say, my God. These people look insane, and then run back into his hole, you know.
Well, that's not so with Donald Jefferson Trump, or whatever.
John Trump.
John. John.
Yeah, his middle name is my name. Yeah.
He has a... your fault. It's your fault.
Right.
He is now a bestseller book. It's sold off the 300 initial printing of, I think, 100,000, maybe. It's off the shelves. You can't get it.
What is it called?
I think it's called Our Journey Together.
Oh, God.
And it is It's a an unabashed, self-admitted coffee table book. It's very large, very large format.
It's got pictures.
Being a photographer, John, you would appreciate it. It's mainly pictures, lots of pictures. And matter of fact, it's all pictures, John, except for the captions. And he received millions and millions of dollars for having the book, allowing the book to be published. And many of the photographs, John, I'm sure you're, as a photographer, in your best days, fantasizing as a White House photographer.
Right,
you know that all those photographs you take are in the public domain, right? So all these photographs that are, most of the photographs that are in the Our Journey Together recollection book, are mainly public domain photographs taken by the White House photographer, you know, taxpayers' expense, of course. And there's nothing in there but captions. And some of the captions are actually written in the childlike scrawl of Donnie Trump with a big felt marker. This is not comedy.
Well,
this is real, listeners.
Right. Well, it'd be interesting to analyze those captions, because I've written about this as a photographer and writer, that, you know, whether photography, whether photographs, you know, without the involvement of Photoshop and things like that, whether photographs can, quote, lie. And my argument is, no, photographs can never lie, because it's a mechanism that captures, you know, the lens can be different, so you get a different look. And, of course, you can manipulate photographs, and that's a lying process. But the main lying process in photographs is the caption. You can have a photograph, and it is what it is.
Yeah.
Although it may remain mysterious and ambiguous to the viewer, so you have the caption to explain it, but often the caption just completely throws you off to what was originally the reality. It's a philosophical sort of issue, but captions lie, photographs don't.
Okay. Now, there you heard it first.
You heard it here.
So let's run this through the John Grant test, okay?
Okay. There you go.
On captions and photographs. Everybody remembers I remember this photograph. They were showing some of this book, this new book, Our Journey Together, by Donald J. Trump.
What a sweet, lovely title.
I know.
Such a warm, cuddly title, Our Journey Together. Yes.
Yes, and it was. We were all together watching this.
Lovely.
And you might remember the photograph, John. I don't know if you do. I think it's of a conference room. It's not the Oval Office. It's a some conference room, in the West Wing or the East Wing, maybe. But it's a picture, it's a conference picture of the cabinet, what we used to call the cabinet in the old days.
And
it was a meeting with the ranking Democrats at that time. And that, of course, the picture was of Nancy Pelosi standing opposite Donald Trump, standing up with her hands gesticulating, you know, as if she was making a point. It's not hard to forget, because I think that's when Nancy and Chuck, you know, stomped out of the White House and said, you know, boy, we gave him a piece of our mind or something like that. I remember
that. They're on the driveway there saying,
Well, the caption written by Donald J. Trump, the author,
the
incredible book, I'm not kidding, is written in a large felt tip pen, okay?
Right, that's his favorite pen.
And it's handwritten. It's not typeset or anything. It's handwritten. It says, you know, Here is something to the effect of, here is Nancy screaming at me. Hence, we call her Crazy Nancy.
Uh-huh.
That
makes my case that photographs don't lie, captions lie. Whether it's a lie to say, she probably did raise her voice because he probably made it necessary for her to stand up, wag her finger at him, listen, you redheaded son of a bitch, Yeah, I'm sure she laid into him. You know, she's a smart, tough woman. And so his use of the word, quote, scream is rather editorial.
Right.
It's editorial comment. Yeah. And she wasn't screaming. She was correcting you,
Hence the name Crazy Nancy. That's what he said. That's what he wrote. It must be true.
Yeah. Yeah. And, of course, as many people say about Donald Trump, he is a classic case of Freudian projection, and as the right follows, and that's who the right does it all the time. In other words, the right projects on the left its own psychological foibles and things like that. You know, it's classic Freud. Classic Freud.
Well, it's also $399 for a autographed copy of said Journey Together.
Is it $399.99 or what?
No, $399 for an autographed copy of the book, and it's off the shelves. I mean, it is going so fast, selling so fast.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me.
They're now in the second printing. big news, John. Only here on Radio Free Kansas.
We got the scoop right here.
The second printing of our Journey Together has commenced. The printing presses are running. They're going to print another 300,000 of these beautiful coffee table books. Glossy, very glossy. Lots of gold lettering.
Well, I must confess that, the last, Republican president who ended up giving us the Iraq War and all that kind of stuff, he did a book of his own paintings, paintings of Iraq veterans and things like that, and a couple of paintings of himself in the bathtub and in the shower and things like that.
Right.
I bought that book for like $35. I can't believe I did that because I wrote something
either.
And I was looking through it. And as my wife is a painter, she recognizes that the guy does have some, primitive painter skills, like Alice, he's reminiscent of a painter named Alice Neal, who was, woman in New York. She's probably a communist, too, but she was in that era. And his paintings sort of are reminiscent of Alice Neal's, although Alice Neal's are obviously much better. But they have a sort of a primitive, a very alive style, and his Bush's paintings had some of that. But anyway, that's a distraction. We were talking about
Donald
Trump's
book. Well, it is a distraction, and I feel robbed and violated, John, because your wife said some of the same things about my primitive efforts at publishing. So, I mean, I just,
she's very generous with her criticisms like that,
She certainly is, but I did not realize I was, ball league.
You're up there with George W. Bush. You didn't realize that.
No, I was in the...
Well, my dear wife, did not vote for Bush, but she gave it away when she saw his picture when he was running the first time, 2000. I remember my dear wife saying, "Damn, he looks good in his jeans," to about George W. Bush. And I said, "You're kidding me. The guy's going to win. My God, a Democratic liberal leftist radical says he looks good in his jeans. My God, the guy's going to win." No question about it. boy, what a world.
Oh, so saith the great Luella.
Right. Yeah, well, that's the wicked wish of the West, right? What a world. And she melts away.
She never really confided in me that and told me that, but I just presumed her name was Luella. So Johnny's got, Donnie has his big hit coming. He's making millions and millions and millions of dollars once again at, you know, grifting away. And he speaks in Texas most recently and practically admits that he's, you know, yes, it was a crime, but so what? If you reelect me, even you who shit and piss in the great halls of Congress and carry the Confederate flag through the hallways,
right,
you too will be pardoned. You will be pardoned,
right,
too.
I'm of the school that the cracks are beginning to show. And Mike Pence's speech, 2-3 days ago, in which he disowned, basically, Donald Trump and said, duh, I didn't have the legal authority to turn the election around. So all this talk from Donald Trump, et cetera, that I let them all down and didn't do it is nonsense because, you know, I didn't have any legal authority to do that. I know that. You know that. And so he made this speech, which was actually pretty amazing, and you know, put tremendous distance between him and Donald Trump. And this was the guy that would, you know, follow him around like a lap dog. So that's a major crack, you know. And then the Republicans are censoring Liz Cheney and what's his name, Zinger or Kinzinger, something like that. Which I heard Kinzinger afterwards, and he's infuriated. I'd never seen him so articulate. I mean, he was great, you know. He was going on, and so you anger these people who are really decent people. Well, I don't know about Liz Cheney, but and so I think the cracks are growing. I think that, you know, we got to get in those cracks with crowbars and start opening them up and stuff, you know.
Well, the RNC, Republican National Committee, met in Salt Lake City, Utah, and that's years ago, and it was interesting, ran by a chairperson who is a relative of Mitt Romney, it's a woman,
right,
who has disassociated herself. And several years back, as Trump was ascending, he was in the height of his power, she became a Trumper, and she removed Romney, any reference of Romney, from her name. So she was chairing that meeting, and they gave a standing ovation to her when they censored Liz and what's the other one? I'm stuck too, you know, like you said.
Yeah.
Kinzinger. And, when they censored him, they gave her a standing ovation. And it's almost simultaneous. We have this thing from Pence in the Federalist Society, you know,
right?
The Federalist
Society, right.
And they gave him a standing ovation when
he said
that Donald Trump was wrong. Now these are both big shit Republicans, and in two different places, almost practically on the same day.
That's what I mean. So, I think the cracks are beginning to show, go ahead.
John.
Yeah.
Then a monster from our past.
Okay.
Newt Gingrich. He comes out in the same week before this. And Newt, you know, the man who holds hands with his wife and says, "Mommy," on her deathbed, and says, "Please give me the divorce so I can see this woman I'm already jacking up with while you're dying of cancer."
I know.
Newt, we all remember Newt. I mean, what a name. It's a perfect name, you know.
Right, he's got the moral compass of a Newt. Yeah,
he does. And he said something very wise, too. He said, something to the effect that if, boy, we are watching at 2022, mm-hmm. we may just imprison some of these people. He said something to that effect.
That's the bluster that these amoral Republicans these days, Donald Trump Republicans, authoritarian Republicans, whatever you want to call them, anti-democratic Republicans. This is the sort of thing they do. They're full of threats. It's like, I think, a lot of bluffing. You know, it's like, okay, you're gonna shoot us up. You're gonna do this. You're gonna beat us up. What are you gonna do? Violence is always suggested. You know, we gotta own the liberals and make them cry again. And how do we do this? And it's violence. Well, you know, it's a lot of talk. Okay, bring it on. Let's do it. Let's get it on. You know what I mean? If you guys really want to be violent, go ahead, start shooting people, and then what's going to happen? The deep state is going to engage, and it's going to track you down. And, you know, we will have a messy period, you could call a civil war or whatever. But, there's a lot of talk, and it's like so much talk. You wonder where it's going, because I think there's so much bullshit and lying going on and blustery threats and intimidation efforts, you know, rhetorical intimidation, that, this is going to catch up with them. Somebody was talking about this the other night on MSNBC. Somebody very eloquent was saying, yeah, I think they're going to crack. These cracks are beginning to show. And, when the electioneering campaigning starts, people are going to be put up against the wall, these Republican people who claim that Trump won the last election. Well, if you put them against the wall and pummel them hard enough, they're going to make it quite evident to anybody listening who's not a, you know, clown show guy that this is unsustainable. You can't have people lying so flagrantly as leaders and expect to do anything but exacerbate the natural decline that the United States is going through anyway. So if you're against China, you know, this lying regime by the Republicans is only adding to Russia and China's glee at how, you know, goofy the United States is and how unreliable it is now and how it's coming apart and it's polarized, so that, you know, that's going to become evident to Russia, it's evident to China, and they will manipulate us and try to provoke us into more doing more of this stupid stuff amongst ourselves. But at some point, I think enough American people are going to recognize this, that for their own self-interest, they're going to say, no, enough, bastante, let's stop, let's try to figure this out and have a reasonable government. So, you know, maybe that'll be good for people like Liz Cheney to run as the new Republican Party, the new post-Trump Republican Party, and, you know, people gravitate to her or to... and people like that, I don't know. But I think the cracks are happening, and I think things are going to begin to, shoes are going to begin to drop. It's getting to be that time. Don't you think that we've been, you know, like especially indictments. I mean, these indictments, at some point they're going to come out. And, you're going to have the President of the United States indicted somewhere. A first, I think, in history. And, how does that play out, in a crazy society like this? It's going to be very interesting. Anyway, that's enough of a riff on that, you know.
Well, no, that's okay. No, that's why we have you on. But unfortunately, Steve Bannon does not agree with you, John Grant.
Bannon, that does not surprise me. Yeah. What does he say?
That he says about the betrayal,
right.
deep betrayal by former Vice President Mike Pence of Indiana, talk show host himself.
Right.
Steve Bannon is a talk show host himself of the War Room Pandemic on Real America News. His daily podcast said that you will eventually regret this until you are in your grave.
That sounds like again another one of these threats. You know, I'm sure Mike Pence has a security detail. He better have a security detail. You know, and I think everybody's going to need security detail after a while.
Yeah.
You know, all these local election workers. You know, they're going to have three muscle bound guys with them. You know, yeah, the security industry, the bodyguard industry has, you know, certainly if you're in an investing mode and as a corporation, now's the time to invest because security, I think, is going to become a major.
It is already, but even
more of an issue, you know.
I have to confess, as a man who ran a bodyguard company of sorts and studied it deeply in the early 90s, that I was sort of looking for that. I'm glowing. I'm just thinking. I don't think I'm too old now to take a bullet or to keep up with up with a client. But I can hire beef.
You can hire young immortals to do it. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Hard boy toys to catch the bullet, you know, as they say. I thought, man, I might be able to get back into the business, you know. But then, because it seems there's
a growth industry now, obviously, yeah.
It's a big industry now, and look at Tony Fauci, Dr. Fauci. He has a full time security detail now because. When I get him to the corner, they admit that the reason they hate Tony is because he lied to them. And I'll say, well, what lie did he tell me?
Well, he said that
we have to wear masks, and then he changed it. You know, first it's masks, then it's no mask, you know. People are confused out here. They're like, you know. So we're just not going to wear masks, of course, because...
Well, you know why people say that? You know why people say that? I mean, it has to do with one, I mean, being very charitable here, it has to do with a misunderstanding of basically the scientific method, you know, that... I mean, this idea, this anti-science movement, of course, which Dr. Fauci gets slapped with, you know, also because he's a very preeminent upfront person in this public health crisis. That's why they nail him. But also he represents science, and as he would say, the data, you know, it's everything's the data, you know. But what people misunderstand about science is not like religion. They put science up as if it's the same thing as religion. It's from God. You know, we powerful people, we're telling you this is the way it is, A, B, C, D, you know, this is the way it is, no argument. No. Science is a process for trying to figure out, pardon expression, what the fuck is going on in a chaotic world. You know, that... life is chaos. There's as many solar systems in the world as there are grains of sand on the earth, you know? And if you don't understand the humility of that in your stupid little world that you think you have the answers, you know, you're deluding yourself. And science comes along after the Dark Ages and the Enlightenment and all that, and to bring light to darkness and all that, is a process to evaluate hypotheses and things you know, that people think may be true. So then you analyze it, you do tests, and you do tests and you record it and you document it in a way that other people can then duplicate the test to see, to cover you, to see that you're not lying like a dog and screwing it all up. So it's a process that of information where people are always second guessing each other, you know, and doctors will be the first to tell you the problem of a doctor or even a scientist is that you make errors. You do errors. You're trying to figure something out and you make an error, but then you have the humility to have more research and more information and you say, no, I said you should wear a mask. No, you shouldn't, and now you should. So, yeah, so Dr. Fauci's going to be inconsistent sometimes because he's operating under the scientific process, the scientific method. But that, of course, does not in any way disengage the inclination to ridicule him on Twitter, et cetera, you know, because those people have more in common with religion than they do with the scientific method. Of course, religion being the case of, God didn't create man, but man created God. Because he needed him.
Well,
because he needed an answer. He needed a definite, certain answer. The scientific method wasn't enough, isn't enough for some folks. Okay, that's enough before I really get into trouble.
Well, Dr. Tony, he made a mistake. He made several mistakes, but
yes,
this mistake will haunt him. Probably not because it haunted because he needs a 24/7 security detail for the foreseeable future of his life, but because it probably haunts him because this argument used by his critics of many. There are many, many critics of Tony.
Sure.
That there's thousands and thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people that died over the changing of the thing. Now, of course, the people that use this "he lied to me" line.
They're misusing the word lie.
Let me finish. Let me finish.
Please,
this
my
important.
Bad. Matt.
There's tens of thousands of dead, hundreds of thousands of dead people.
Right.
They attribute to him, so they use that as a reason to not wear the mask. This is important. Because you have to see the method of this kind of thinking, if there is a method to the madness. I mean,
well, it's childish, though, isn't it? The argument you just made, I'm not going to wear a mask because I don't like Dr. Fauci, you know, it's like...
No,
it's like my, you know, it's a little...
No.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, this is a matter of religiosity. This is a matter of
God. There you go.
A matter of
there you
getting
go.
Is, understanding. Yeah. And you're missing it. This is the voice of God to you, John, okay, right now.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Now, can you make yourself sound a little more like God with a lower voice or something?
Because Dr. Fauci is infallible. He's infallible, and God is infallible. Therefore, he's fallible about the mask once. Fallible about the mask and everything. He's a fallible, fallible man.
Yeah.
So therefore, I do not have to wear a mask at Walmart, no matter what Walmart says.
There you go. Right.
Is that clear enough for you?
I hope so. Yeah. I will listen to it again sometime
and I will drive trucks into Canada and I will blockade the truck in such a fashion in the capital of Canada, and I will not leave, and I will not wear a mask, and I will not be vaccinated.
Right. Well, the Canada thing, I have the paper in front of me, trucker protest rallies conservative groups around the world. Well, the reason is that, listen, trucker protests are really powerful and attention-getting. because it's not like, you know, one person represents what, you know, 3 square feet or 2 square feet of space. I mean, a semi-truck takes up a lot of space and causes a lot of disruption, let me tell you. And then if you get 100 of them, boy, you know, stop the presses. It's news all around the world. And so the power of that kind of protest, obviously, and this guy, like the says, conservative groups around the world are rallied by this. It's like, you know, everybody's saying, oh, my God, let's get the truckers on our side now, and we can have a huge demonstration in Washington with 1,000 trucks, and, you know, and just the fantasies go on. I was involved, as I told you in the green room, with a demonstration in about 1980 as a reporter with a truck demonstration of about, you know, 40 trucks that were protesting some law, national law, and they took over a highway in Pennsylvania. And, it, you know, I was a story on it. I was in one of the trucks and followed it all day. And, you know, it made a huge splash. It's interesting, you know, because a lot of these truckers, you know, they're just normal working guys, men and women. They aren't radical, far-right, Bannon-type, you know, followers. Yeah, most of them are just, you know, they have a beef, they have a grievance, and so it becomes this big news story, and it's effective, I guess, in that sense, because it certainly did, caution and intimidate, I'm sure, the Canadian government. I'm a little unclear what they're demonstrating against the United States for demanding that they have tests and vaccines when they cross into our country. Do you understand what their beef is in that respect?
I think it has to do with being vaccinated, whether they're going in or out of the border.
Right.
I'm not sure.
So it's at the border, going from one country to another and running into problems. Yeah.
Well,
it's an ultimate bureaucratic problem. Obviously, nothing's more bureaucratic than a border, you know. Yeah.
Well, not only that, but I mean, let's look at this realistically. Most of the truckers that are there are bringing their own trucks, which is a contradiction in itself. If you think about it. If you're a professional driver, you don't own your own truck. You're paid because of your professional skills at
right.
driving a truck.
Right.
So some people coming from a long line of Teamsters,
mm-hmm.
those people are not really truck drivers. Those people are more like pirates.
Well, they're an independent contractor of themselves.
No, there's a difference. There is a difference.
Okay. All right.
They own their own trucks. They are a capitalist of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They call themselves independent, but actually they're very chained to their truck, and they're not really capable of any kind of thought other than just being a cowboy. They call themselves cowboys. That alone indicates the mentality. I mean, they think they're out there on their own. You know, this is what they do. It's the American spirit. You know,
well, I mean,
people...
how many country songs are written about truckers in that sense, you know?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, you know,
the
Knights of the Road, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
It's that whole thing, like motorcyclists, steel horses.
Yeah.
They ride steel horses. It's the myth, the great mythology, John Wayne in the West, the open road. You know,
well, truckers
it has
do
nothing
have that,
to do with,
and yeah.
Well, they're slaves, but the reality is they're slaves to their machines. And when you have a $250,000 machine to maintain, they get very upset. I mean, and this is what's going on in Ottawa.
Right.
Oh, there's
sure.
the bomber coming
right.
over. Do you hear that?
Hello?
We are, there was a huge roar that came over the top of the farmhouse. And it
really?
Was, it's been going on since Sleepy Joe woke up and said, you know, let's do something in Ukraine.
Are you getting strafed by F-16s or what?
No, I would call it's not strafed. We're getting the windows shake, and it's like living by a train because all these big, what are they, C-130s, these big Globemasters, they're
really?
Stationed to 20, yeah, they're stationed about 30 miles west of us
at
Forbes Air Force Base, which is a big place. And back in Gulf War II, I've lost track of them, Gulf War II in the early 90s, they would come over, and that's how I detect when there's real trouble. There's something going on big.
Mm-hmm.
When these big Globemasters, cargo masters, could come flying over our house because we're in the flight path. And when I first moved here, I thought they were doing it to just because they knew of my thoughts. You know, I was schizophrenic out in the barn, you know, drinking whiskey and hallucinating. And the plane would come over roaring and shake the barn, and the horses would run. I would think they're not only are they after me, but they're after Saddam Hussein. And
they're looking in your farmyard for that.
And neither one of us had anything to do with 9/11. I mean, this is
right.
I would say.
Yeah, there you go.
And I would get my gun out and shoot in the air when they'd fly over, and it's just,
oh really?
Nothing stopped them. What we're having,
you know the Canadian, speaking of Canada, the Canadian author Farley Mowat. You ever heard of him?
Yeah.
He's an environmentalist type crazy guy, wonderful guy. He's written wonderful books. He was not permitted. You know, he's written wonderful books about environmentalist wolves and the wolves and the Arctic and things. But he is not allowed into the United States he may not be with us anymore, but because of the McCarran Act. And why was he prohibited from coming to the United States for the McCarran Act? Because in one of his books, he told about shooting at B-52s. So we're going, you know, with a .22 or something. He would shoot at them.
This is for the record. I did not shoot at them.
I shot
in the air. But these flights are coming over, and they're coming over again. In the same frequency. I mean, we would get three or four of these cargo masters every day. And they fly low. Out here, they fly low. Like, I mean, I'm talking 1,000 feet or less altitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really put on a rump on the ground when they come over here. Yes. And we
so they're in a landing pattern, or are they taking off?
No. It's just a regular flight pattern. It's a flight path, and it's just a common flight path they use. I did some investigation in it, you know, about who I talked to. This is talk about hearsay. I talked to the son of a guy. I talked to a guy who is married to the daughter of a captain in the Air Force at Forbes. Okay. I talked
and
to the daughter.
Wait, the father of a daughter who's married to a captain at the Air Force. Okay, I got it.
No. You got.
Did
they
get a room?
He's a drinking partner of mine. He was married, going through a divorce
with
this woman, and his soon-to-be ex-father-in-law was a captain at Forbes Air Force Base, at Air Force Base out in Topeka, and he also happened to be a chaplain or some sort of big shot in one of the local
We call him a sky pilot.
He was a sky pilot in every way.
Yeah.
Okay, but except he was not a pilot.
Sky pilot. Yeah,
he was just a maintenance. He was a captain, but he was just basically something to do with maintenance on the ground. But
well,
he
was
elite.
He must be a captain in maintenance ordering privates and specialists to do the work.
He's
got a clipboard. He doesn't have a wrench or anything like that. Okay.
No, he had a real God complex because he also was an elder at one of the local churches too.
Okay,
so,
there we go back to the God complex. Okay.
Yes, there you go. And he confessed to his daughter, who spilled her guts out to her soon-to-be estranged ex-husband. She didn't know at the time. He told me, I'm going to get rid of her, and he said, okay. And I said, don't use a gun. He says, no, I'm going to divorce her.
No,
okay, that's legal.
Just...
and he did eventually get rid of her. But the thing is, the captain of the maintenance crew out there at the Air Force base, he said that mainly the main thing that they use those globe masses for is shipping war materials, and they only use them for that purpose. Okay, and
what the military's got them for. I mean, that's what the military is for. Killing people and destroying things. You know, hey, come on.
Leave it to the military man and the family to tell us the obvious, right? And he said, oh, okay, so they're all in war. It is true, they're going to have a war, and we're right in the flight path. More or less, he never told me. But it was hearsay. I mean, I never heard it from his eminence, the father-in-law's lips.
Okay, right. You heard it indirectly,
indirectly, it was all hearsay, but the guy.
Well, religion is usually based on hearsay. It's usually.
He had a lot of problems. My drinking partner, he did have a problem. He drank mainly, and he drank too much. But he would come over and tell me these stories. He would come over and tell me. He would say this. She said, he said we are going to war, and that's why they're flying over your farm, Mike. You're in the flight path. And I go, well, yeah, I'm in the flight path. I know that, but I mean, are they? You know, I mean,
well,
are they
maybe you should question their flying over your airspace. You know, I mean, what do you have? How many acres you have airspace? Do you have there?
10 acres, 600.
10 acres of airspace. Well, they got to fly around that. You know, make them fly around that.
Well, my buddy, he just went hiccup. I know, but I'm going to get rid of the bitch anyhow. Thanks for the information. Thank you for being my spy to the Air Force base at Forbes in Topeka.
Right.
And I appreciate all you do. And
well, you know, when I was raised. When I was raised in redneck South Dade County, we were, as the crow flies, probably, just several miles from Homestead Air Force Base, a major SAC base, Strategic Air Command, right? You know, and they had, dozens of B-52s, huge eight-engine B-52 bombers, And they would crank those babies up like in a Saturday afternoon, and we could hear them. It was like we could hear this hum coming through the woods, it's just you're aware of being protected by the Strategic Air Command, And I remember, my father, who was a war horse, certainly conservative and all that, but he had a language. He was very smart with language. And he would, every time we'd go fishing, we'd go by the Homestead Air Force Base gate, Strategic Command and all that. It said, there's a big, big billboard out front. It said, "Peace is our profession." Right.
Yeah, right.
That was the Strategic Air Command's motto. Peace is our profession. Well, my dear father, the conservative bigot that he was, my dear father always found that absolutely ridiculous. He would go off and say, "Peace is our profession." You're kidding me. You're flying around in these big things with atomic bombs that you're going to, and your peace is your profession? You know, and, you know, I always appreciate my father for noting that. Anyway, it just reminded me, living close to a base, you know. And, of course, in Dr. Strangelove, you know, when the military, the army has to come and invade General Jack Ripper's base because Sterling Hayden as General Jack Ripper has just released all his Strategic Air Command B-52s, you know, like from Homestead. And as they're all shooting at each other, you know, there's the scenes, very realistic scenes of the Army coming in and shooting, be defended by the Air Force, and there's this gun battle going on. It's all going around a huge billboard that says, peace is our profession. Which is one of my favorite scenes. Is this the end of the show already? God.
Well, I'll be back next Tuesday with John Grant. Unbelievable.
All right, Mike. Listen, take care.
Gossip is our word. That's it. Gossip.